The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, get ready to live in a nuclear-armed world, 10, 20, 40 nations and more with nuclear weapons. Because today, no matter the SALT talks, no matter the pacts between nations of strategic nuclear arms limitations, no matter all of the attempts of one nation after another to limit the spread of nuclear weapons, we are seeing right now an unbelievable explosion in nuclear power plant construction. We are seeing nuclear nations such as France, one case in point, and even West Germany that has the material and the ability to build nuclear reactors, spreading nuclear power plants around the world. As a matter of fact, recently it was revealed by Senator Abraham Ribicoff, Democrat of Connecticut, that nuclear machinery with the potential for weapons production was being supplied by France to Pakistan, Taiwan, South Korea, and Argentina. And as a matter of fact, West Germany is also supplying nuclear power plants to South American countries, as I said last time, not the least of which is Brazil. Did you see not long ago the spectacle of Prime Minister Miki of Japan on the ground before the reviewing troops? He had been struck to the ground by an ultra-rightist Japanese nationalist who beat him in the face with his fists, who was screaming slogans, striving to prevent Miki to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. You see, Japan is not a signatory so far. And I've been saying for years that Japan is the supergiant of the Orient and warning that there are ultra-rightist forces, nationalist forces in Japan that very likely will ultimately come to power. And that Japan, once again, is going to really frighten the daylights out of the Western world. That just like a bizarre repetition of those pre-World War II days of the growth of the Japanese Empire and the growth of a powerful force inside West Europe, that we're living in a time where in the very near future around the corner from us, you're going to see the creation of a nuclear-armed United States of Europe, at least some kind of a power inside Central Europe, under a configuration, a pact, an agreement, an alliance of some kind. Whether it's called the United States of Europe or called by some other name is perhaps arguable, but Bible prophecy reveals there will be ultimately 10 nations allied together in what will be nothing short of an end-time resurrection of the very same system that ruled over Europe, the Mediterranean area, and much of the known world for all those centuries. It was called the Holy Roman Empire. Bible prophecy says that's going to happen. Meanwhile, over in the Orient, the huge power that is looming there is going to be Japan. Japan could, in a matter of months, become a nuclear power. And I think that it's noteworthy that these ultra-rightist forces are so active that you can see the Prime Minister of Japan, Miki, sprawled on the pavement as a result of being beaten to the ground by an ultra-rightist shouting slogans against Miki's posture of being a signatory, eventually, of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Japan has not signed that treaty so far. And the ultra-rightist forces in Japan are arguing Japan should become a nuclear power. Of course, the United States, perhaps even the Soviet Union, no doubt China, and all the rest of the world would like to see Japan remain a non-nuclear power, as I think any thinking person would like to see all nations remain non-nuclear powers, and the ones that have the nuclear weapons see to the disarming and the defusing of them and try to find some sensible means of disposing of the ultra-dangerous radioactive waste that would exist and totally get rid of all nuclear weapons which could threaten the entirety of humankind, not once, but with many times overkill. Unfortunately, most people, it seems, in government, at least in some governments you can talk about, are not all that thinking. It seems there is a kind of an insanity that indicates that because we have 20 times overkill, 30, 40, 50, people argue about the amount of overkill we have, maybe 100 times overkill, at least of each other, that's been argued too. That means the Soviet Union could have the power to wipe us out 100 times, we have the power to wipe them out 100 times. Yet, in spite of that awesome nuclear arsenal, the stalemate that exists between the two giant powers, it seems the little countries want their own nuclear stalemate. It is somehow absolutely required for their ego. Paraguay would probably like, because of Alfredo Stroessner's military dictatorship, the nuclear bomb so it could just terrorize Uruguay and perhaps Argentina and Brazil. Argentina would like nuclear bombs because it wants to be a power recognized by all the other countries in South America. Brazil wants the nuclear power because it wants to be a power recognized by all the other countries in South America and around the world. Black African nations want nuclear weapons. Southeast Asian nations want nuclear weapons. And so it goes. Apparently, the utopian state toward which all nations would like to head, given today's man-made human governments, is that ultimate time where every nation on the face of the earth, including Indonesia, including the Philippines, including all the countries of Southeast Asia, Central and South America, the banana republics of the Central American Peninsula, or perhaps isthmus is the best word, and all countries of Black Africa, tiny countries, some of them you never even heard of their names. The average person simply does not know where some of those countries, such as Chad or Niger, and even though they're large, they're very, very little known in world news, and where they exist, where they are. How about Rwanda and Burundi? But you know, each one of them would like to become a nuclear power. So apparently in the minds of human leadership, the ideal state for the world would be where each nation of all the hundreds would have the capacity to instantly obliterate all the other countries, meaning the entirety of the world many times over. In other words, if each nation could eventually achieve the kind of nuclear stalemate which presently exists between the Soviet Union and the United States, apparently then everyone would have enough. And we could stop building nuclear bombs. Insane, you say? Well, how else do you analyze what's happening? One country after another announcing the development of nuclear power plants. Of course, quote, for peaceful purposes only. For instance, recently it was announced that the Soviet Union had agreed in principle to provide Libya with a nuclear research center down on the north shore of Africa, which includes a reactor to be used for, quote, peaceful purposes. That was the Arab Revolution News Agency out of Libya that reported that. The agreement that was signed, by the way, was reached during a recent visit to Libya by the Soviet Premier Alexei Kosygin. Now, the agency said that under that agreement, the Soviet Union will provide details of the project to Libyan authorities no later than November of 1975, and the Soviets will also train Libyan technicians to run that center. Libya was very proud. She can also turn to Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, and say, hey, look at us. We've got our own brand new, gleaming, Soviet-built nuclear reactor for peaceful purposes only. And then when they explode some kind of a device, they, like India, will be very careful to call it just a nuclear device, not a bomb. You know, it seems to me like every time you read in the newspaper or the weathermen or someone blasting the bits out of, you know, the glass out of huge, big buildings in New York City or something, and they're standing there, you can see the pictures of them sweeping up about a ton of glass. They call it an explosive device. But to me, if the thing goes off, it's a bomb. I mean, if you put enough firecrackers together, it's a bomb. And I don't care what they call it in India, if it's a nuclear device and it blows up, it's a bomb. But you see, you're supposed to be reassured with little countries like Libya, and all the other countries, about 40 of them in all, scattered all around the world, including even Bangladesh, India, hostile neighbors potentially ready to launch war at any moment. You can talk about North and South Korea. You can talk about all the other countries of the world where problems exist. In Central and South America, where there are deep-seated antagonisms and a revolution a week. And you begin to wonder, what is the world going to be like with nuclear weapons all around the world? Well, we talk about non-proliferation. But in the next 5 years, the superpowers are going to grow to the capacity of 100 times overkill. Now, I've talked about 50 times overkill of the whole world, because that is what some scientists have alleged. Others say, no, that's an error, it's only 20 times overkill. I say by the time you get to even once, it's purely academic. Because the ability to exterminate all life on the earth, and I'm not necessarily just saying all human life, I'm saying that we live in the kind of a world today where all life forms as we know it could be feasibly obliterated by existing weapons. And now, at the rate of present nuclear bomb construction, we're going to have enough power to kill each other 100 times between the Soviet Union and the United States. And that's according to a 1975 yearbook of the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, by the way, which is called SIPRI for short. And that book said the superpowers have already deployed and stockpiled more than 40,000 tactical nuclear weapons with an explosive power equivalent to 700 million tons of TNT. Once deployments allowed by the strategic arms limitation talks are completed, their strategic arsenals will then total about 17,000 nuclear warheads on missiles alone, with several thousand others carried by bombers. That would be doubling of the present nuclear arsenals of the big powers, and would give them the capacity to destroy each other 100 times over, as well as to blot out civilization. Now, of course, that means a functioning society. It means that there might be some remote civilizations, quote-unquote, left, living more or less like Stone Age savages, fighting each other over dwindling means of survival, if the two superpowers obliterated each other. But the consequences to the entirety of the Earth would not really be a concern of you or me, would it? Because we wouldn't be around anymore. Maybe there would still be some people on New Guinea. Maybe there would still be some people somewhere in Africa. Maybe a few people in South America or Australia would survive. Who knows? But it would be a picture kind of like that movie way back, On the Beach, with just a very few people left. That book said that by 1980, that's only 5 years hence, the world will have accumulated 770,000 pounds of plutonium, a raw material which is used for building nuclear weapons. And even if safeguards could be 99.9% effective in 1980, which they can't be, won't be, and aren't today, enough plutonium could be diverted without detection to produce nuclear weapons at the rate of one a week. Interesting. No, it's more than that. It's mind-bending. It's unbelievable. It defies belief. And you know what really triggered it all? There is an excuse, a reason. Well, it's the oil crisis, you see. It's the energy crisis. Everybody says, oh, we've got to hurry to develop alternative energy sources. So the first thing they look to is nuclear energy. They want nuclear reactors to produce electrical power. So nuclear power plant construction is booming around the world. And commitments to nuclear power outside the United States rose by 34% in just 1 year. So, it is expected that by the turn of the century, that time where the futurists and all others talk about rosy, wonderful times of plenty for all, 38 countries are expected to produce from 13 to 85% of their electricity with nuclear power. And the United States expects to produce about half of all of its electrical power from nuclear reactors. Well, is it any wonder, then, that when you read in Matthew, the 24th chapter of your Bible, of a time without parallel, without precedent, where it would be possible for all of humankind to be exterminated, that you are forcibly brought face to face with the fact that you are reading a prediction, a prognostication looking way down beyond 2,000 years into the present in the ancient pages of Bible prophecy, and that you're reading a statement of Jesus Christ of Nazareth who defined, who described particularly the days in which you live. He talked about a time of great tribulation in verse 21 of Matthew 24, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And these statistics I am giving you are real, they are true, they are meaningful. And he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved. Moffat's version adds, no flesh saved alive. There wouldn't be a man, woman, or child left alive if something doesn't shorten the days. Now, what does shorten the days mean? It certainly doesn't mean crank the sun around or the world around in such a way as to make 11 hours or 9.5 hours per day. It's biblical language that talks of divine supernatural intervention. Now, people can scoff at that, but let me show you what the alternatives are. You can scoff at it, and this is kind of a philosophical statement, but let me say that I'm not offering you the only reason to believe in it as a convenient out, or a kind of an anchor for the soul, or a kind of a spiritual Linus's blanket and a thumb in your mouth. I'm not saying you've got to believe in this because you don't have any other alternative short of the destruction of all of humankind. Therefore, you should believe in it. I'm saying you ought to believe in it because you prove it is true, and because you can demonstrate there is a God, and that the Bible is His Word, and the prophecies of the past have been fulfilled, and prophecies for the present are being fulfilled. You should believe it because you prove it to yourself, not because you want to believe it. Maybe you don't want to believe it, even as the disciples didn't want at first to believe Jesus had risen from the dead. They were a very skeptical group. They didn't want to believe Jesus Christ of Nazareth was alive. Maybe you don't want to believe there is coming divine intervention from outer space, God Himself taking a hand in world affairs. But that's exactly what has to happen. What are the alternatives? Well, the alternatives are nuclear bomb war, world war, a huge pile-up of radioactivity, of fallout, of radioactive wastes. You know, you stop to think of how much of that stuff we've got since the first atomic bomb was exploded at Hiroshima. This country, the United States, has amassed nearly 80 million gallons of dangerous, terribly dangerous radioactive waste. And the bulk of all of that is a byproduct of military weapons and research programs that dates clear back to the old Manhattan Project, it was called, which brought into being the first atomic bombs that were dropped on Japan. The remainder comes from commercial nuclear power industries that generate a lot of our, well, 8% or so, 8 or 9 or 10% of the nation's electricity. And the danger, by the way, from those wastes, how long does it last? 10 years? 20? No. 100? No. 1,000? No. The danger from those wastes, that's right, we're at the point now where science has given us the ability to create dangerous substances, chemical compounds, toxic poisons, radioactive wastes, which will last for hundreds of thousands of years, and still have their poison, danger, capacity. You know, what they're thinking of is that someday, maybe, men could load nuclear waste aboard rocket ships and fire them clear out of the solar system. They want to just send them clear out into space. That's quite a thought, isn't it? Space littered with nuclear debris floating around. Others want to bury them in basalt beneath the bed of the Pacific Ocean. That's a someday type of thing. Miles and miles down through water, and then miles down beneath the basaltic crust of the earth, hopefully not next to the magma, but anyway, down there somewhere. There are several disposal schemes that are proposed to safely and permanently isolate the huge pileup of dangerous radioactive waste from mankind and his narrow ecosystem, his environment, because we've got a growing inventory of very highly radioactive atomic wastes. Now, these are the times in which we live, and yet people don't want to face these facts. They don't want to face the times in which we live. They want to look at the present in the kind of a colorful, rose-hued pair of spectacles of our own personal gripes. Every time I see the usual little petty group axe grinding for its own private self-interest, whether it's a group of laborers that want 30 or 40 or 50% pay raise, or whether it's a group of people on strike in England, or whether it's a group of people that are arguing about old age and pension and food stamps, like the two hip types you heard about with the colorful shirts and the medallions and the sloppy jeans, long hair, beard. And he is saying to her, okay, I'll go by and I'll pick up the federal welfare while you go by and get the state unemployment check. And then I'll go and get the food stamps and put in an application for more. And you go by and make sure and get your Medicaid application filled out. And then I'll stop by and see if we can't tap the soup line for a free lunch. And you stop by the church and beg a handout. And then when we're all through with that, we'll meet at noon at the federal building for our demonstration against this rotten, filthy establishment. And that's about the way it goes, isn't it? But every time I see people grinding their own private little axe, like some of the people on welfare and food stamps, maybe not all, who are rather rotund and a little fat and happy, and then I look at Bangladesh, at India. You ought to read the current number, by the way, of the National Geographic and take a look, if you have to go to a library or a bookstore to see it, at that incredible series of pictures, that article about Bangladesh and starvation and famine down there. And try to get the overview of the world, not just your own private area where you live, but the overview. Now, in this series on the Gospel, according to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, into which I have entered, I've been trying to show you time and again how the Gospels do tie directly into the present-day world in which you live. The Bible plainly says, and you are left with no other thinkable alternative, that unless God Almighty Himself, who does exist, would cut short these days and would supernaturally intervene in human conditions and affairs, there wouldn't be a man, woman, or child left alive. Now, I say you could never have understood those words of Jesus Christ until the modern space nuclear age. Prior to that time, you couldn't have understood exactly what that meant. Now you can understand it. But when he said, except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved, he went on to say, but for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. And you know, the Bible talks about the very elect who cannot be deceived. It talks about those who are called and chosen. It talks about a people who are given knowledge, the knowledge of the true overview of world conditions. They are called babes in the Bible. They're called little ones by Jesus. He looked up to his Father and said that he thanked him that these things, meaning just simple truths, not giant intellectual headbenders, not all kinds of intricate technical or technological knowledge that just about scramble your brains, as some people might say, but simple truths. Of what is man? Of why is man on the earth? What is the purpose of human life? Is there a God? What kind of a God is he? Is there more than one member of the Godhead? What do they look like? Are they literal? Are they spirit, that is, a certain essence or being? Or are they just a mood or a feeling? Are they something within you? Are they an animism in plants and animals and insects under rocks, as some people might like to think? Or are they literally thinking, intelligent, creating, living beings in whom is life and who have life to impart? Really, those aren't technical questions. Those are philosophical and religious and spiritual questions, but they're questions you can answer and questions for which there are answers that are logical, rational, and intelligent. And you ought to get the intelligent and logical answers to those questions. Why were you born? Why are you on the earth? Why do you draw breath? What is your life all about? We're so deeply down inside of our own rut, just the top of our ears above the rut we've etched for ourselves in our own daily walk of life, that we cannot see the big overview, not even of the county, let alone the state of the nation. But what about the overview of the entirety of the world and the overview of all the universe, of all of history, and looking on out into the next 5, 10, and 15 years where your own private life is concerned? The only way you can do that is in Bible prophecy. And to understand Bible prophecy, you need to understand the Bible is real, that it's true, that it's fact and not fiction. You need to understand the identity of the major countries and powers of the world. If you want to write for that booklet called The United States and British Commonwealth in Prophecy, that's a mouthful, but you can just mention the U.S. in Prophecy, and we'll know what you mean, U.S. in Prophecy. It tells you the incredible story, not only of the rise, but of the predicted collapse of the British Empire, which is now already an accomplished fact, but it tells you where that great wealth came from. It tells you exactly where those powers that are presently still the British Commonwealth of Nations are identified in the pages of Bible prophecy. But let me tell you, even though that is a very vital key for understanding of many of the Old Testament books of the Bible, it is not something that is going to one way or the other alter what happens in the future. And even though people might absolutely reject and scoff at the idea of the identity of the United States in the Bible, that isn't going to do away with what the book of Revelation says. It isn't going to change the four horsemen of the apocalypse or Revelation the 17th chapter that talks about 10 nations in a place specifically pointed out as being a city of seven hills. It isn't going to at all alter these prophecies of Matthew 24 verses 21 and 2 that have nothing directly to do with any identity of one nation or another, except to say that the whole world is going to enter into a time of great tribulation unprecedented in all of history. But it's interesting, it's exciting, and it gives you an insight and a key to understanding a biblical prophecy to know the identity of major powers of today in the light of Bible prophecy. And this booklet, The United States in Prophecy, it includes the British Commonwealth. You can ask for the U.S. in Prophecy. It can be read in one sitting. It tells you the biblical origins of our own peoples, and you will be surprised. Now, this is a very up-to-date and, as a matter of fact, condensed version of a larger book. This one is graphically illustrated in full color. It is, take a look at it, it's only about, 58 pages, but some of those pages are pictures and some of them shorter. So I think even an elderly person could read this in probably about an hour at the most, in a day or two, and most people could go through it in probably less time than that. But it's a very interesting book, and there's a great deal more research that you might want to do after you read it. But you ought to read it, whether you agree with the concept or not in advance, you ought to write for that, The U.S. in Prophecy. And while you're at it, ask for this booklet, What is the True Gospel? I have said in this series on the Gospels that people don't even know what the meaning of the word gospel is. They tend to think the minute you say gospel, that's something that is religious, meaning ceremony and organ music and hymns and the choir and the preacher intoning soft nothings from the pulpit. It has to do with a dynamic news announcement of the coming world government of Almighty God in the future. It has to do with what kind of an intervention God is talking about. What Jesus meant when he said, except those days should be shortened. That is the very essence of the gospel, that there is coming a divine intervention. And this booklet, What is the True Gospel, makes it very clear. You'll be shocked when you find you probably have never really heard the true gospel in its entirety. Oh, I know it includes salvation, but you need to see what else it includes besides. And request also the current plain truth. And request the booklet, U.S. in Prophecy, What is the True Gospel, and the Plain Truth, growing out over 3,400,000 circulation. The current number has this Curing the Fear of Aging article. And the Bible, the world's most controversial book, the book on missing dimension in sex, a series of articles, the NATO summit article, Portugal, is it going to be Europe's Cuba, Britain going down the drain, a series of British political cartoonists examine the economic plight of their beleaguered nation, and other articles of interest in the current Plain Truth.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.